You're listening to Vet Candy.
Hi, this is Dr. Jessica Turner, and you are listening to Living Well with Dr. Jessica, your one stop for all things health and wellness, not just what to eat or how to move, but everything in between. And today I have a special treat for you guys. I know initially you may hear what I'm about to say and say, that is not a treat. That is not a topic I want to talk about, but it's one that really needs to be had. And so I'm excited to be able to dig into finances today with our special guests, Tom Seiko and CJ Burnett. They are founders of Florida Veterinary Advisors, a national financial advisory firm based in Tampa, Florida, dedicated to the veterinary community to remove financial stress by providing each person the next step in their plan. They are the co-hosts of the Smarter Vet Financial Podcast, speakers for the veterinary school group VBMA, RACE providers with 7 approved financial courses, as well as national speakers and authors. So much value already. Like, you make me want to go look up your courses, to be honest, but it's such an honor to have you guys on. Welcome aboard. And just if you want to just say hi to our listeners and share a little bit more about you guys and how you ended up where you're at and what you're doing. So Tom, why don't you kick us off?
Absolutely. It's a lot of fun being on these shows. And I think it's great to be here with you today, just to have a conversation. And I feel very honored that you want to go take a look at our RACEs. You should go take a look at all of them. They're fantastic. So Florida Veterinary Advisors, I guess the biggest part of it for anyone who is listening for the first time about us, we actually started in 2015 was when our firm actually came to be. And what was really interesting about it, I didn't realize I'd be where I am in the financial business. And it really, when I was in school, I started off wanting to be graphic design. And then I transitioned to computer science because I loved coding and computers. I have a background in building websites and writing code. And after a semester of college, I was like, forget this. My buddy was doing 9 hours of calculus per night. And I was like, this is insane. And I was like, what else do I like? Like, what else gives me like interest? And I realized as I've gotten a little older, I love psychology and I wish I would have went that route, but I went finance. So I chose finance because I was like, I love money. I love the economy. And, you know, spoiler alert, not all financial people have a financial background. a lot of it doesn't actually provide as much value as you think it would as you get into the real world. I'm sure many who are listening, especially Jessica yourself, when you became a veterinarian, it's like, there's still so many little things that you don't know that you're like, I got to figure it out. So CJ and I met in the middle of 2014, and it was really, we wanted to really impact the community. We wanted to do something bigger than us. And when I was sitting in a training class, there was a list of different professions, occupations, these different groups that were like, hey, these are people we can really impact. And veterinarians were on that list out of like 20 people. And I was like, who can I connect with the most? And I was like, well, I love animals. My wife always makes fun of me about it. I've had fish and cats and birds and dogs. And I have a little Maltipoo. His name's Theodore. And my wife's always like, stop loving him so much. I'm like, I can't. Like, that's such compassion for him. And I was like, well, let us see if veterinarians need some help from the financial side. And as we started exploring in our area over in Tampa, we met someone at a local association. And then by the time we knew it, there was people out there helping from a financial standpoint. They were, but they weren't really, let's say, pulling it together in a way where it was really easy to understand. And it helped people get really great clarity on how do they really progress through their plan in a way where they get the results that they want. And a lot of times people look at us and they don't even know what they want. And we have to help them figure that out. What's happened from since then till now, I would say around 2018 is when we really started taking off a lot more. When we became RACE providers, started speaking at conferences, got plugged in with the schools. We created our own podcast in April of 2022. And it's not because of COVID. We were talking about it for like a year and a half. I think we were mentioning it to schools as we were doing it. And CJ and I, we've actually got 3 full-time staff that are now part of our team, and 2 of us, and we're trying to hire another advisor because we've just got a lot going on. So we have a lot of projects and things in the fire right now.
CJ, feel free to jump in whenever you want.
Yeah. And I mean, my background is also in finance. We both went to the same college, got a degree in finance. My first career though was as a violin player. I actually took high school online because I couldn't attend school and play like gig. So I had to take it online, which was convenient because it was kind of a new thing back then when I did it. I think we had probably one of the first program. I was part of one of the first programs in our county that tried an online school program. Wow. And this was 2002, 2003. So it's quite a while ago.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy. Vet Candy makes learning fun with the most fascinating people on our planet. Our entertaining, continuing education programs are made for your streaming world. Fabulous, fun, and free. Available on demand, anywhere, and anytime. Don't miss out. Subscribe today on iTunes, YouTube, or a platform of your choice. Or visit myvetcandy.com for more information.
I said, I'm in that boat. I graduated in 2004.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So then going through the motions, majored in violin performance in college, was kind of set on having a career in music. And then one day I just was like, this isn't working. You know, I love playing, but I don't want to practice 12 hours a day. And I remember getting done with my juries. Juries is something that you do in college. Getting done with my juries one semester and just being like, I think I'm done here. Like, I got to figure out something else. And went to my mom and I was like, hey, what would you do if you had to do it all over again? She's like, I think I'd probably do accounting. And so I took a course in accounting, which I had already been trading stocks. My mom got me in that. Gosh, I was maybe 16 when she flew me out to an investor's business daily symposium out in California. And I caught the bug then. So, you know, trading equities and options and things like that was kind of just what I was doing. That was normal to me as a 19-year-old. And so once I switched over to finance, then, you know, got graduated with a degree in finance. Although in the interim, I got married at 20. I had my daughter was born when I was 21. You know, I lost my dad at 18. So I had like 3 or 4 years there of just like nothing but change, which was fun and exciting. Nothing that I think anybody really wants to experience. The early part, at least whenever my dad died, that's been something that's never really, you know, you never really heal from that. You never really get to back to normal. But, you know, on the other side of that, I got a degree in finance and then started working in the finance industry. Just went straight into it right out of college, which is, you know, very daring to say the least, because our industry is, I would say it's very hard because the industry puts people in positions where they're just selling product and they're not really actually providing a significant amount of value beyond just like, here, buy this and pay for this insurance. And, you know, there's no real habit helping, I would call it. So, you know, whenever we got together, Tom and I got together, we started creating systems and processes around things, and it's grown from there. So
I love that y'all both had this desire to just do more than what was normal per se. You wanted to make a bigger difference. I think it's so unique that, you know, you sat down and looked at this list of different career types that like really needed your help and went that way, because I think I was so excited about meeting with you guys because it's still like a pretty novel idea to have like groups that are so specific to working with like veterinarians. And I just think it's really interesting hearing your stories and how y'all started out and ended up, you know, coming together. I could definitely relate to having like this all over the place track on what you end up doing. I think when I was a senior in high school, I literally changed my mind like 5 times. I was looking at art schools. I had accepted a scholarship at a college that was pretty much guaranteeing me a spot in med school. And I accepted that, then declined it because I was like, I don't think I want to go to school there. Like, but it's just like, you have no clue, you know, what you want to do. You think you do, but so much of it, I think it's trial and error. You kind of get to this point where it's like you said, CJ, like, I don't think I want to do this anymore. I think it's cool to hear other people's stories. So
Tom and I are very analytical, but we also recognize that things have to be simple. And in order to communicate things clearly, then you have to boil things down very, very, very small. And I think the vet space, because we had one client, then we had two, then we had three, and it kind of snowballed over time where we found ourselves just, I would say, almost appreciating the market as a whole, like veterinarians as a whole, because it was like, because it was complete accident. It was kind of by accident, kind of on purpose, like purpose by accident. It was like, hey, let's try this and see where it goes. And then the more we went down that road, the more people started just appreciating what we did. And we're like, well, you know, if you, you know, out of 10 clients, if you had, you know, a handful of them that were just really telling you how great you are, you're like, well, shoot, like maybe there's more people that we can help in that area that fits in that category. So,
man, I have so many questions. Like, I know the we are going to dig into, you know, the stress that surrounds the holidays, but real briefly, I just want our listeners to have an opportunity to kind of get a better glimpse as to what y'all do specifically with veterinarians. Am I correct with saying you do not work with just clients within y'all's area? It's like, if I wanted to, I could work with you guys. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're in 35 states, I think.
We actually have some clients in your state.
Yeah. So I would just love to give you an opportunity and our listeners an opportunity to learn a little bit more about what kind of stuff you help veterinarians with, even touching on, you know, the CE we mentioned. What kind of stuff do y'all touch on there to give them even more initiative to actually go look at, you know, and use that for race credits?
I'll touch on the personal side of things real quick, and then CJ can touch, because we do two different sides, personal and business. You know, a lot of our focal point in the veterinary community is concentrated on education, because, you know, ultimately we see ourselves as guides, and we're here to help people understand things from a bigger picture. And I'm sure you're familiar with the term triage, being a veterinarian, that, you know, we want to help people understand, how do I prioritize and be able to make sure my decisions that I'm making are going to help me achieve the results that I want. And a lot of the times people really don't know what the results they want. And what they've been told to think that the results are is that, well, I need to invest money. I need to go get certain returns. I got to buy disability insurance because I'm in school. It's something that I have to get. And what we have is actually a planning process that we've designed. Our company has actually designed that. What it is where we help people understand things again from that bigger picture, 30,000 foot view. And it takes into consideration the use of a balance sheet. So a balance sheet is your assets, your liabilities. So everything you own, everything you owe, and then it gives you your net worth number. But then we also account in people's cash flow, and we account in their protection items. So you got things like how people are spending money, how they're paying off their debts, managing their taxes. How are they saving? How much are they saving? How are they protecting themselves from a lawsuit due to a car accident or a sickness or injury or legal documents? They passed away. Like, how are all these things going to impact their vision of what they want? So what we do is we sit down with them and we help them dream, and we do what we call their reasons for planning. So we help them understand, like, why is this important to you? And by default, people have like these very consistent answers they give us, but there is more under the surface, and we want to spend some time with them to help understand that. And then as we talk, we're like, we have a foundational process that we go through, which helps take a look at protection, cash flow, how they're paying off debts, building up all their assets. And it's really to be to create a attention and awareness to spots that maybe they haven't considered before, put all the pieces together, and then constantly keep looking ahead. Because what I find so amazing from planning, especially CJ and I've been in the business now for 10 years, is that a lot of times people will reach out to them and will say, hey, look, we should get together. Even our clients, and they're like, oh, we're good, nothing's new. And we're like, okay, so what are you going to planning on doing in the next 6 months? And like, we're going to buy a house, we're going to have a baby, we're going to get a boat, we're going to do this. And then by the time you know it, we're like, how does all that fit in your plan? So what we're here to do is be those people to help guide them through that. And I will tell you, advisors, depending on who you're looking for, like, we're very focused on education. And then we have different ways that we get compensated, which we can always talk about if that's something you want us to touch on. But the personal side is really hands-on of the education part of it. If they have other relationships, cool. Like, you can work with other people and we can help you along the way.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Put the needle on the record.
Vet Candy Life is a talk show hosted by well-being gurus Dr. Quincy Hawley and Renee Michelle. Each episode features expert tips, lifestyle advice, and real-life experiences from the most interesting people in the world. Check it out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more.
So, you know, I was joking at the beginning about how like this is going to be a treat, but not really, because everybody hates talking about finances, right? I honestly think there's so much hesitation around it because there's such a lack of understanding with it. And I know me personally, if it wasn't for my husband, I'd be like really nervous about the state I'd be in, to be honest, just because that's not how I've always been good with numbers, but I don't like numbers. Whereas he likes them. He's a pharmacist. He's used to working with numbers. He, you know, played around with going into engineering. It's always just been his sweet spot. And so I've always relied on him, you know, like he's the one that makes sense out of all the things that you were kind of just running through. And I could say we are in a pretty stable financial state because of the work that we implemented, you know, years ago with budgeting and things like that. I know I would be lost. Like I would be like in this call and like making an appointment with you guys. But I think that y'all are focusing so much on education because you recognize that that's such a huge need. And that's such a big reason why there is so much, you know, like it's kind of one of those things where, well, I'll just kind of keep putting it off or ignoring it because that's more comfortable. You know, because again, we don't even know where to start. We don't understand half the things that you just rambled off, you know, like.
Well, it's also what's so interesting about it too, Jessica, is that it's a taboo subject. I mean, it's not something that people openly talk about, especially, I mean, I'm sure you'd never go up to your friend and ask them how much money they get in their bank account. Because it's just not something that people talk about. It's kind of, you probably get some kind of cringe a little bit just thinking about it. We actively do that all the time because that's what we do. It's our business. But it, and the whole thing is about making things really simple for people, because then it's like, you know, there's a lot of jargon out there. I'm sure even in the veterinary community, I hear a lot of different acronyms and different things that I like over my head all the time.
And it's more in how people think, like, because I don't think a lot of people see money as a resource. They just see it as this necessary thing, you know, that they need all the time. If people can kind of go from that, and most of us are raised in homes that might have more of a scarcity mindset of, you know, always paying attention to every dollar and not an abundance mindset, where we start to think that we start to think more in the scarcity position as opposed to, you know, how do I make more? People think, how do I spend less instead of how do I make more? And sometimes you got to ask both of those questions in order to get to a good spot.
And I do think a lot of people are stuck in that scarcity mindset. And I know before we started, we were talking about the impact or backgrounds, how we were raised, how money was viewed within our families are often very different when you enter into a relationship. And that holds true for my husband and I as well. You know, half of the reason why he is so good with money is because he grew up in a family where you had to be smart with your money because they only had so much to work with. Whereas I was on the other end, and we had more wiggle room. And so money was kind of viewed as this, well, we used it more, not flippantly, but there's a big difference between how money is viewed. And so we've kind of had to meld together. And, you know, I have a healthy respect in money. And like you said, see it as a resource and not something to be abused, or you have to be smart with it. You have to be a good steward of it. And I've kind of allowed him to not be so stressed around it, even when there's no reason to be stressed around it, because that's kind of what he's used to. So it's kind of a balancing act. And I think that's kind of where y'all come in too. You know, you kind of provide that balance if someone is, you know, in a position where it's just them and they don't have that outside, you know, input.
And I think with both kinds of people where they come to the, like our first meeting with them and they're royally freaking out. And I'm looking at their balance sheet. I'm looking through their documents. I'm like, you guys are good. Like, chill out. Like, you are so okay. And then other people come to meetings and they're like, yeah, I do everything that I need to. And I'm looking at their balance sheet going, oh my gosh, like this is an absolute disaster. Like, and it's not a personal thing to us. Like, we know that no one taught people growing up. We never took a high school class. We never got college help with it. You have a lot of financial entertainers out there on YouTube and creating different material and content out there on the internet that you can go and read. But you know, it's almost so much that it's overwhelming. And I think people need information, but they also need the translation of how that information affects them as an individual and as a married couple and as a family unit. Because it's those, you know, those dynamics can change.
I want to give you a chance quickly to share on the business aspect before we jump on a break while I have you kind of in the hot seat. So why don't you touch a little bit on that aspect for listeners that may be interested in working with you guys?
Yeah, I think on the business side, so we are both certified exit planners. We work with business owners who exit their business. That is a form of selling oftentimes. Sometimes their exit plan is just to hold their business until they pass away, right? And they're going to leave it on to their kids. So succession planning, those types of things are huge in that arena. Employee retention programs, and we actually have a systematic process that we've developed, just like from the personal plan, we have one on the business side that really just investigates how they're managing systems from their employees to cash flow to protecting the business. So, you know, I think on the business side, it's definitely more education leaning. However, we do need a little bit more time with the business owner to understand their business model a little bit more in detail, enough to understand how we can help them beyond just what they're doing now. I mean, it's definitely much like the personal planning flow of things, but more on the business side, because their business is not just going to impact them. It's going to impact all of their employees, all of their employees' families. And so, you know, making sure all of that's buttoned up is also mission critical.
Do you see that you, I'm assuming you have some clients that utilize both aspects, or are they possibly focused just on the business or just on personal?
Yeah, no, most business owners will do both. Very few of them only do the personal or only do the business. They usually will do both because they're interlocked. They're the same. You know, like the reason why they became a business owner for personal reasons, most likely, right? They became a business owner because they wanted to make more money. They wanted to have more flexibility. They wanted to multiply themselves, not just, you know, see one, two patients, three patients, four patients every day, but also be able to train and bring up another generation and multiply themselves so then they can impact more lives. They oftentimes do both because they are somewhat interlocked. And a lot of the times people will start on the business, they'll contact us for business planning purposes. And then we ask them a few questions and then they sit there and they go, you know what? I want to do the personal planning first because clearly, clearly I need to do that. And sometimes they contact us for personal planning reasons and we ask them a few questions and the business is what we're going to start with. So it kind of just depends. It really comes down to their reasons for planning. Right. And really understanding back to what Tom was saying earlier, like what specifically are they looking to get out of things? And sometimes they don't know. And sometimes we have to explore and dream with them.
I love that y'all encourage when Tom was saying his on y'all initial like sit down. That's what y'all start with, you know, dreaming big. And I agree. You know, it was only a couple of years ago where I really started asking myself, you know, what do I even want in 5 to 10 years? Like, we don't ask that so often. And so I'm not surprised that a lot of people come to you guys and they have no clue what they want or what they're trying to work towards.
There's people too that will, well, I would say they come to us. There's some that we have that will ramble off a whole list too. They don't know what they want to accomplish either on that side of it, because it's like, now we need to figure out how do we make, I would say I'm like more of like a realistic optimist kind of thing. I don't know if that really makes sense or not, but I want to be optimistic about things, but I also want to be real about it. So it's like helping people understand the, you know, you want to dream because you don't want to shoot down people's dreams, because there's a lot of crazy things that have happened out there in this world that people said that could never happen. It's impossible, but it could happen. So, but sometimes you got to pull people back and be like, okay, well, what do you really want? Like, what are you really trying to accomplish?
A lot of those people that have that long list, when we really get down to it, half that stuff they actually don't want. They just thought they want it, right? They thought that that was like the thing that they should be doing as opposed to the thing that they actually want to do. And I think exit planning, one thing that I always found funny was exit planning is not something you do when you're just about to exit. Like people contact us, they're like, hey, I want to sell tomorrow. And we're like, yeah, if you're selling tomorrow, like that's not business planning, right? That's not exit planning. Exit planning comes the day after you buy the business or the day after you start it. Because every business owner will eventually exit their business. It will be voluntarily or it will be involuntarily. That type of planning, that is always critical, because sometimes you will involuntarily exit your business. It's not something you want to do. It's just something that you might be forced to do because of life circumstance and just where are you going?
You need to have a plan for that. No, I love that you touched on that. I think that's important. And I'm sure there's people listening in that probably had that question. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'd love to dig into some holiday talk, because we know that's such a huge stressor around this time of the year. So we'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
this is Caitlin Palmer. You probably know me as the desk wench. You know, the sweet TikTok receptionist who has to deal with the evil Karen Stevens. Well, if you like that, you are going to love my new podcast, Desk Wench Confessions. On my show, I have funny guests who tell me about their own Karens. Plus, we have contests, giveaways, and skits. Trust me, you are going to love it. Check it out on a podcast platform of your choice on Vet Candy Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. You were listening to Living Well with Dr. Jessica, and I'm hanging out with Tom and CJ from Florida Financial Advisors today, veterinary advisors. And we are kind of shifting gears into finances in the holidays because, I mean, I think it's safe to say that that is a huge stressor for a lot of us. I feel like if you're saying no, you're probably lying. I know it is for me. And so I'm excited to just be able to share the wisdom these guys have on what are some things that we could do starting today so we could actually enjoy the holidays. And so Tom, I'll let you kick it off and just dive in. What are some things we could start doing to kind of lower that stress?
Well, something that I would say that I always touch on a lot of, even just when it is not the holidays too, is getting on a budget, or I like to call like an AKA spending plan, because there's a whole different mentality behind it. But usually when people go into the holiday season, I would say I'm kind of guilty of it myself, is really what is the parameters or those, let's say, framework that we're going to use from spending during the holiday season, especially one of us might want to spend a bunch of money on one thing or for a certain family or people. And then the other person wants to spend on a whole bunch of other different categories. And I know even my wife, she's asked me lately, she's like, hey, what do you want for Christmas? And I tell her everything that I want. And I'm like, it's very expensive. So I think it's like getting to the part where it's like, hey, I think you need to get to the part where there's like, hey, what are we going to spend this holiday season? What is realistic for us? And once we can determine like what that amount is going to be, that can really be able to drive of like, hey, I'm not going to stress out too much because we've already determined what we're willing to do this for this holiday season. So it could be a matter of making even like a list of things that you want to get. Every holiday season, what I love to do is I list out all the people that I'm going to be buying gifts for. And then I create a specific range on what I'm going to spend on them. And I do my best sometimes, you know, kind of speak a little out of the lines, but got a little margin for error, right? But the more and more that you can track some of these expenditures and be well aware of it, because I think the biggest part of it where we tend to get a lot of stress with money too is because money comes in and money goes out. And then we don't understand from a bigger picture of like, okay, am I positive or am I negative from my spending for this course of this past month, these several months? I know earlier this part of the year, we moved into a new house. And I know within the matter of month, that first month, I think we were probably negative cash flow for that month because it's just like the amount of money that went out of our pocket. So just really be able to break it down of like, what is my budget? What are we going to spend this season? And if you haven't decided what that number is going to be, it'd be a good idea to really sit down and jot down what it could be. And I don't have, maybe we should create some kind of percentage. I don't know, CJ, just kind of thinking like, maybe there should be like a percentage of like, hey, this is how much you should allocate for Christmas.
That would be so helpful. Cause I was about to ask you, okay, if someone's listening, they're like, I've never done a budget of any sort before. Like, how do you even start? So the fact that you just asked on that.
That's a complicated formula. My head goes to one, not everyone's income is the same. If you're in residency, it's not going to work the same as, you know, if you've been 10 years out of school. So, you know, I don't think we have necessarily a percentage, but maybe we can come up with one or some sort of formula as far as what would work and what wouldn't.
I was thinking maybe even could just be along the lines of between 1% to 2% of your gross income for the year could be a reasonable number. I don't think that would be killer. Maybe for some reason it could make or break the bank, but you know, 1% of your income, let's say it's $1,000 for the entire year for all gifts, because let's say you make $100,000 for a year. I mean, I don't see being anything unreasonable, but if you think it's too much, then you can always be like, yeah, it's way too much.
I think it also has more to do with like, what else are you doing, right? And how big is your family? Because I know for us, you know, with 30 plus people, it's like a 1% of someone's income. If they got that kind of, it's like they're buying, they're going to the dollar store for everyone's present, right? So per person is what I would probably aim for, right? How many people are you going to need to buy presents for? And you might have to kind of get very selective and then, okay, well, how much money per person should we spend? Do the math and try to see if you can figure if you can wiggle that into your budget. And hopefully it fits in the macro budget. The budget that is not just holiday, but it's all the time, because it, you know, you don't just live in a silo for the holidays, right? You also live, you got 11 months prior and you still got the rest of your life too. So I think when it comes to budgeting, conflict resolution is probably more of the focus in the event whenever you sit down with somebody else and you're trying to decide, okay, what should we be spending on and on who, right? Really making sure that you guys can have an idea of what that looks like and agree upon the parameters and then stick to those parameters to make sure you don't go outside of it.
I think it also kind of forces you to get creative whenever you have that outline. I think it's funny that we all like are moving or have moved this past year, but so much of our holiday expenses or, okay, we've never had to decorate a massive front door. You know, like it's things that we never really had to think of, and we understand it's going to be like a one-time purchase for the long haul, but it's still like, you know, when you see that on top of like normal gifts and, you know, family pictures and all these other things, it's very easy to let it become a stressor. And so just being able to have those kind of conversations beforehand, instead of like, oh, okay, well, we need all these things, I'm gonna go buy it. And then it's like, what did you buy today? You know, like you total blindsided. I know when we started having conversations about a holiday budget, like it really opened up our eyes to, okay, well, there's like a whole category that we didn't really have to think about in the past that we need to factor in. And so it really does give you guidance and encourages you to kind of look big picture with what the holidays usually look like for you or what they look like this year. What is something else that you see people kind of, you know, you hear so often that people go in debt during the holidays because they don't, you know, recognize the effects of their spending kind of in the moment. What is one thing that you see has been a huge part in keeping people from that place with your experience with working with people?
Yeah. So a few years ago, I actually found out something by accident. I noticed that if I paid off all my credit cards on Friday, I'd usually spend less during the weekend.
Oh.
And because, you know, it was like one thing, credit cards can run away from us if we're not careful, right? And I didn't really mean to do that. It just, every Friday afternoon, it was like I'd finish up my work week and it was just a natural cadence to go and log into my accounts and go, oh, okay, look, I got credit cards. I just pay them off. And I didn't really think about it too much. And then over time, it just seemed like that started helping more and more people because those credit cards wouldn't escape, like they wouldn't get too big. So then, and I think especially during the holidays, if you can create some sort of cadence, and maybe even it doesn't even have to be every Friday, but just some sort of Monday morning ritual that you look and go, okay, what are my credit card balances at? Go ahead and pay them off. Don't let them get too high, because there is a tendency to kind of, you know, I don't want to pay them off just yet. And that's kind of what they're betting on. Credit card companies know that you spend 30 to 40% more on a credit card than if you used your debit card. So that's just behavior, because the swipe feels the same, whether it's $3 or $300, right? So, you know, you used to be, we would use that stuff. What's it called? It was green. It went in your wallet. Cash, right? So, and like cash, like when you gave the cashier $3, you know, it really didn't feel that bad. But when you gave him $300, you felt like the energy draining from your soul, right? The $300, right? So, you know, it used to be you felt the pain associated with that. So I think, you know, paying off your credit cards every week or having some sort of cadence to making sure that they get paid off pretty quickly, so then you don't let those balances get too high. And now you're sitting in January going, oh, geez, now I got to figure out how I'm going to pay these off. And you might make decisions. You're going to make decisions differently when your checking account is lower. Right? That's just normal behavior. Whether you make a lot of money, whether you make a little bit of money, you know, I typically say if people have an income that's higher though, you want to almost make yourself and trick yourself into thinking that you don't have money, because people who are really good budgeters are typically the ones with the lower income. As your income gets lower, you get better at budgeting because you know you have to. It's a necessity. As your income grows, you tend to kind of relax and you let the credit card get to 10,000 sometimes, right? Or a pretty large amount where you're not paying enough attention to it because there's margin for error, right? So it's fine. It's not going to hurt later. It will hurt a lot later when you get to the time when you need income and you can't work, right? When you're in your 60s or your 70s, but you know, it doesn't have an immediate source of pain right now.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hey, this is Dr. Quincy Hawley, and I'm here to tell you about a new show. It's Vet Candy Rounds with the Hawleys. That's right, Dr. Tierra, the love of my life, and I have teamed up to bring you the most fascinating cases in the world. Check us out on iTunes, Spotify, or a podcast platform of your choice, only on Vet Candy Radio.
I love that tip because it really does take that effect that cash has and places it on the court. When you were saying that, I'm like, yep, that's where I was yesterday. So I've been using a lot of cash for holiday expenses for that reason. You know, you're much more aware of it. You know, I'm keeping track of, okay, I spent this much at this place for this. And I had a place that, you know, it was a couple hundred, and it's so true. Like, it hurts to give that versus $3, no matter, you know, if you have it or not, it's so true. And I do think that's why so many people get in trouble with credit cards. So I love that you discovered that. And I could totally see why doing that on a Friday would make you more aware of your spending over the weekend, because you want to keep it zero or at least low.
Right, right. Yeah. It makes you think twice over the weekend when you're looking at, you know, something like a new car.
Yeah.
It's kind of like one of those things too, to throw in here with the budgeting that we were just talking about as well, that a lot of times people, where they even struggle with budgeting, going on the concept or the habit of credit cards every week, the more that you can get into that routine of doing it, the easier it's going to be over time. Because it's like, it's so funny, I joke around with my wife every so often and I ask her, I'm like, how much you got on your credit card? And she's like, a lot. And I'm like, why don't you just go pay it off? She's like, but it's so much. And I'm like, you got the cash, like, why don't you pay it off? And I was like, if you do it every Friday, it's less of a sting. But then at the same time, like, if you're trying to budget, for instance, where a lot of times people are kind of going in that wrong direction is that, hey, now I'm waiting until the end of the month to now figure out what my budget was and what I spent, to then hopefully not do it again the next month and realize what I have. And it's one of those things that, like, that constant routine of doing something over and over and over, and ingraining it, it's like it takes that time to constantly build that habit. And once you can get into that, it really creates this, it's amazing, that sense of awareness that you start having around your money. I've been tracking my spending personally for 8 years. Like, I was actually doing it earlier today before we got out of this call. So
you sound like my husband. I want to say we started not long after we got out of school. We both graduated the same year, him from pharmacy school and me from vet school. And so we had a lot of debt, and we bought a house and got married and moved back home, graduated within like 6 week span. So a lot of change. And like I said, thankfully for him, he recognized, okay, we're in like uncharted territory. We need to be smart with our finances. And so we joke about living on very little and watching like our friends that had been out of school for a long time buying new vehicles and new boats and doing this and doing that. And we're over here like, can't do anything because we're trying to pay off student debt. But it really does make such a big difference. Anybody that's listening, you know, if you, oh yeah, I hear about budgets and this and that, and you weren't doing it, it's just one of those things that you feel like you're being restricted, but you're actually gaining so much freedom by doing it. And the more you, like, the longer you do it, it just gives you like a sense of peace, just knowing where your money is and how you're using it.
Well, I think once you get the hang of it, oftentimes, like for me, I haven't had a budget for 5 years. I got off of a budget. Now, I budgeted at first, and there's actually, I think we did a whole podcast episode around how we do this. But clients, oftentimes we say that they should track spending, but eventually you don't have to. Eventually you get to a spot where you kind of know where things are. And then as long as you control what hits your proverbial plate, financial plate, which is your checking account, once you control how much hits that account, usually then you can control how much you spend. And it doesn't really matter where it goes, right? You're still, you know, going to be saving 20, 30, 45, 40% of your income by accident. There's a couple of different behavioral things that we put on our podcast. So if anyone's interested, I mean, I'm sure they're somewhere in there. But, you know, so sometimes budgeting doesn't have to be forever. Once you get the hang of it, then you can figure out a system that allows for you to not have to budget, and then you can get off of it. And now you know where the fence is, right? So like, because my daughter goes, you know, at our church, right where the playground is, there's a fence, and she can run around in that playground where the fence is, right? And do whatever she wants, right? But there's freedom inside the fence, right? But she can't go outside of it. So once you've created those parameters from a cash flow perspective, then you don't budget anymore.
That's such a good analogy. And I'm glad you shared that. And, you know, looking over the past couple of years, I feel like we had seasons where, yeah, we had everything to look at, but we really didn't look at it often. We didn't talk about it often, but like moving and into a new home and needing, you know, it's been a topic that's been more prevalent because there's been a lot of shifts in, you know, our spending. And we would just recognize we need to make some pivots somewhere because we have different expenses that we didn't have before. So
I will just add in there. I don't track my spending because I have to. I track it because I want to. I'm just going to add that in there. I just like knowing where everything goes. But there are some people, I will say, when we even have clients of ours, they're like, hey, I started tracking my spending. And I remember, it's like so vivid to me. She's like, I was at Target and I was looking at something. And she's like, what would Tom say right now if I were to buy this? And I'm just like, I mean, that's a very interesting thought, but I'm like, did it help?
Which is, yeah, it's so like good and bad. You're like, okay, I think I'm okay with that. But like, then am I the little angel on your shoulder with the little horns of like, don't buy that?
Like, oh, well, as we wrap up, I would love to give y'all the opportunity to just kind of share one more tip or trick with our listeners as we, you know, we're heading into the holidays, but we know what's right around the holidays, you know, a new year. A lot of times that gives people an opportunity to kind of start fresh. And so, you know, if we have some people listening, they're like, I know I want to take better control over my finances. And now they know they can reach out to you guys. So that's a plus. But do you have something that they could kind of take and run with after the holidays?
It's simple, but complicated at the same time. It's the knowing what you want to get from your money and having reasons for the things that you're trying to accomplish. I think one thing that you'd hit on earlier, Jessica, maybe with CJ as well, is just we actively at times will do things in our lives and we will spend money that is not really providing us nourishment or providing us the purpose that we had anticipated it to do. And I will say Amazon is really good at sucking the soul out of everyone because now they've got the one swipe buys. And I swear, it's like, it gets me almost every day. It's like something, oh, okay, one swipe. I've already accounted for that in all of my stuff. So, but then at the same time, like for those who are listening, you know, what are your reasons for a lot of the things that you're trying to do in your life, especially when it comes to your financial life? What do you want to accomplish? And I think the biggest question that we always ask people when we work with them or even the first conversation, you know, if you fast forward 3 months from now, if you fast forward 6 months from now, a year, if you want to add a little bit more time, let's say 3 years, what do you want to work towards or accomplish during that time period to feel successful? Like, what do you want? And when you can really be able to digest that to a certain degree and really, let's say, prioritize and organize those different things, it'll help you make better decisions in your finances. I will say when I started doing that, my entire decision-making is different than what it used to be.
And I think probably to start with the list of priority, like write down a list of things that you want to do, that you want to accomplish, and then prioritize them. And then really ask yourself, like, imagine getting that thing done, putting yourself in that position. Are you going to really get the satisfaction from that you think you are? And oftentimes you might find that the list of 10 things turns into 4. Like Tom said, it sounds simple. And some of the simplest things in life are hard. And I think reflecting back on what you've already done so far and how certain things that the decisions that you made in the past and how they made you feel, I think is probably also a good start in kind of understanding where people want to go. Cause some people are like, I want to pay off their student loans. And then they pay off their student loans. And I go, how is it? And they're like, eh. It was something that they worked for like 10 years on. And then they got there and they're like, eh.
Isn't that amazing how that happens too? I experienced it in my own life too, every day.
Same here. I remember, yeah, the way I wanted to pay off the student loan. like, cool. What do I do now? I don't feel like I'm any richer. So like, I think it's just good to really reflect as you've got the holidays, as you're going through the holidays, just really reflect on what you actually want. Forget about what you need. Don't think about need. That sounds so like, you know, everyone's constantly telling us what we need. That's what marketing does. Marketing makes us think that we're not happy unless we have, they have to sell us. And we really have to get away from the need. Like, what do I need? We really have to start thinking like, what do we actually want? Because we live in a country, especially with veterinarians, like you make enough money to cover for living and groceries and things like that. Your needs, you know, for the most part are met. It's now a matter of dreaming beyond what you're currently doing.
I forgot which one of y'all mentioned it earlier, but I think when you attach something bigger, you know, that's what we were just talking about, to your finances, it makes you more excited, more willing to actually do some of that work up front and want to stay on track, not just with the holidays. And I love the tip on reflecting on how you felt with past experiences and accomplishments, because it is true. So often, you know, we work so hard for certain things. And like y'all said, it's not really what we wanted at all in the first place. And so that's such a learning opportunity if we allow it to be.
John C. Maxwell had in one of his books, he wrote, experience without reflection is useless. Something I think I might be paraphrasing, but I think literally that's what it said. Experiences oftentimes will lead you a little more forward than you think.
I'm a big, strong believer of even with the things that you want to do, I feel like our lives are moving at like 1,000 miles per hour, that something that was important to us is no longer important to us after a certain, like even the thing about like student loans, like say paying them off, of course, is a big topic. But it's like, I want to buy something. I want to do something. I want this. I think everyone should be reevaluating their goals of what they want to accomplish every 3 months. It's something that CJ and I have created a humongous habit around. Like we sit down and we evaluate, like, is that still a priority? Mm-hmm. Or does it not matter anymore? And it's just so incredible. Like even like earlier in this conversation, it's like people will contact them and say, hey, let's get together and talk. And then they're like, nothing's happened. But then when you start talking to them about the next 3 to 6 months, they're like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to buy that. I've already got this, building a house. And you're like, what did we miss? Like, what is going on here? So like the same thing happens in our own minds when it comes to our finances, because like we constantly are getting inundated with different things. And when you can decide what you want and then sit down and really readjust and reevaluate them very periodically, at least every 3 months, it'll keep you focused. That's the biggest part of it all.
Good stuff. I could definitely say that there's things that my husband and I talked about, you know, fresh out of school that we wanted that we now laugh like, yeah, we don't want that anymore. we don't want a place in New Orleans anymore. What were we talking about? Like that used to be like one of our dreams because we'd go all the time.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy. As a veterinarian, it's important to perfect your clinical skills. That's why Vet Candy created a master course in toxicology. The master course is taught by a board-certified criticalist and delivers a thorough evaluation of the science and clinical practice skills needed to master toxicology, from decontamination to treatment. And when you complete the course, you receive exclusive tools to celebrate, recognize, and share your accomplishment. And what's even more exciting, the course is free and provides RACE and New York State approved continuing education credits. This program is brought to you by Vitoquinol. Start learning today at myvetcandy.com/talks. Start learning today at myvetcandy.com/TOX.
It has been such a pleasure to have you guys on. I really hope our listeners check out so many resources from their site and the CE they offer. And we have an article through Vet Candy that y'all could read more on what we talked about today. But always, I don't know who wants to dig in, but whoever wants to share how people can get in touch with y'all if they're interested in working together or just following and taking advantage of all that y'all have to offer. Tom, I think it's you.
All right, it's me. I'm up. All right. Well, so we've got a website of a lot of different great things that everyone can go take a look at. We are constantly putting new things on there too. It's flvetadvisors.com, where you can Google Florida Veterinary Advisors. You'll find us all over the internet. Lots of different articles. Our CEs are actually on demand on our website. So if you want to watch them, they're no cost to you. Absolutely no cost. You can go there, watch them, get credit. We have some topics about business stuff. We have stuff around personal finances. And then we have our Smarter Vet Financial podcast that is available like everywhere. I think we're up to like 60 or 70 episodes now, which is pretty awesome. And beyond that, like if there's anything else from resources or different things, please, you can go check out our website, go to our contact us page. And if you want to meet with anyone, just make sure to fill it out and reach out to us. The first meeting is no cost if you don't want to chat with us, but we're definitely here to help serve and be here for the veterinary community.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. I may take you up on that free consultation to kick things off. Well, so CJ keeps throwing you, I don't want to say under the bus, but like he keeps making you chime in. So now he gets to showcase and bring us all home with a nice song.
Vet Candy Radio.